We're hosting our first Coffee House Shots live event of 2025 on the 26th of February at the Emmanuel Centre in Westminster. Join Michael Gove, Katie Balls, Kate Andrews, and very special guests Jonathan Ashworth and Robert Jenrick for a look to the year ahead. They'll be tackling such questions as, can the Chancellor reframe the budget in her first spring statement? What will Trump's first 100 days look like? And will reform cause an upset at the local elections? For tickets, go to spectator.co.uk/coffeehouselive.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by James Hill and Paul Goodman, Conservative peer and journalist. Now, James, this has been quite an exciting week because on Tuesday there was quite an exclusive event about the most dynamic force in politics today. Tell us about it.
Yes, so this was a big Reform Party fundraiser. Estimates provided, of course, by Reform suggest that it was about £1 million was the amount raised by this fundraiser, Oswald's, which is one of the Robin Burley clubs in the centre of London, and the greater the not so good of the Reform adjacent movement packed in there. Derek Chisora and Holly Valance were the celebrity flavourings offered. And we, from what we tell in the ample media coverage given to this, there was a fantastic food, great company, Nigel Farage singing God Save the King. And it really points to an issue which we've talked before about Tory membership numbers. Reform have now overtaken them on membership numbers. And now they're going after their donors as well. And this is really all about replacing the Conservatives as the main vehicle in British politics on the right, or anti-Labour, if you will. And so, you know, they've got bigger membership, they're going to have more donors, and then it's about sort of beating them in Wales and Scotland next year, and all, of course, geared towards 2029. And really, I suppose, part of the issue is about what does a party in opposition offer in the first year of opposition when there's no election on the horizon? Well, Reform have obviously clocked the fact that, you know, they want to make it fun, so they were luring over these donors. Farage gave a speech in which he talked about we need the ammunition, provides the ammunition to get on fundraising. And I spoke earlier to someone who was formerly involved in Conservative Party fundraising, and basically the more clarity you get down the next, the more likely you'll get a 50k donation, etc. So really, it's basically a warning sign for the Conservatives that, you know, they've gone from being the first most interesting party in British politics to now the third most interesting. And there is a real danger, and you see this countless reports about a lack of fundraising in CCHQ. Shadow ministers often grumble about doing everything themselves. They're used to having these great, you know, the red boxes and the cars and the endless mandarins, the flunkies, Sir Humphreys, etc. Now they don't have that. And that is the real challenge. And very few of this generation of Conservative politicians, because of the high attrition rate, because so many of them are younger, etc., remember what it was like before 2010. I think barely about 15% of the current Tory MPs were in opposition before. And it's a really long and hard bloody slog.
Mm. And Paul, how worried do you think the Conservative Party should be about the fact that Reform seems to be turning so many donors' eyes? Because on Tuesday, Basim Haider and Mohammed Amirzi were just two of the former Conservative donors who were there, who last election donated hundreds of thousands of pounds to the Conservative Party.
So the dinner and the publicity surrounding it were part of Reform's campaign to spook and
troll we're buying into
and
it now.
frighten the Conservatives out of their wits and send them screaming to the hills, crying, we're no good, we confess we were wrong about everything, we're handing over to Nigel, thank you very much. You have to say Reform, in some respects, are doing okay. They've got this mass of members signed up, if members is quite the right term, because essentially Nigel Farage really owns Reform, so they're really joining a kind of fan club rather than a party with any power. I mean, Conservative members have very little power indeed. Reform members are going to have even less. But they have the members and they had the event. What struck me about it as being really interesting is that the fundraisers' names that I saw were all former Conservative donors. Some of them, like Mohammed Amirzi, rather controversial ones. And what I think Reform really need now to break through and demoralise the Conservatives further is a present Tory donor defection and a sort of MP, or if you can't have that, make do with a Lords defector from somewhere. And there haven't been any yet. We're heading towards local elections where you can reasonably expect Reform to pick up a lot of seats as they've not had any before. And it is true at the moment that the Conservatives, and this is a reflection of where they are and the inheritance they have, they're not really generating very much news of their own. The news that they are generating tends to be when the more energetic shadow cabinet ministers like Chris Philp jump on top of stories that embarrass the government, like the policy exchange report, I declare an interest as a senior fellow at policy exchange, that was leaked this week about extremism.
Yes, and James, time and again, Kemi Badenoch is facing questions about whether or not she should be more active, more vocal, given that it has been a few months. I mean, previously she said, I don't need to give any policies now, I'm only just in the job. But do you think that excuse is going to kind of run out of steam?
Well, I think today we found a great example of why so many Conservatives feel inhibited on this. Priti Patel did an interview with The Sun's Harry Cole on Talk TV, in which he was shown a graph of the so-called Boris wave, you know, the number of migrants who came here post-pandemic in 2021, 2022 and 2023. And her response to that interview was very defensive. It was saying, look, these were people who were Hong Kongers, Ukraine, that Ukrainians, that was actually less than half of the numbers in the years relevant. She was also saying that, well, we ended free movement, and Harry then retorted by saying, you know, you opened up the doors to the rest of the world. And it was, I think, the fact that you can see that an hour after this interview, Lotto has now rushed out a statement. Priti Patel has now issued a tweet saying that, as she's accepted, there were numbers too high, etc. I think shows the difficulty, which is that every time they want to talk about the future, obviously their record's going to come up. I understand the need to earn a hearing, etc. I also think that the danger is you can't just simply rely on the policy commissions, because that is simply going to be filled by the giant, you know, they often call the Conservative Party an autocracy. Perhaps with reform it could be a theocracy. You know, that will be just the, you know, Nigel Farage's party and his five horsemen of the apocalypse are all going to be there filling the space. I do think there should be more emphasis on kind of attack. You can sort of respond to people talking about your record by going on the attack and saying Labour are making things worse. There's ample space, it seems, in sort of terms of the difficult decisions facing this Labour Party. So I think there's plenty of room for that. And I do think, to take Paul's point, you know, keeping one's nerve is going to be key in all of this. And I think that the best thing they can do, and I think I speak to too many Conservatives who sort of evoke Margaret Thatcher in the 1970s, that time has passed. There wasn't a party on the right back then rivaling the Conservatives. It should be much more looking and learning from what Keir Starmer did so successfully when he was one of only two men in the post-war era to go from being an opposition to government in a single one term, one majority opposition of one party to another. Ted Heath was the other example. And I think that Keir Starmer did as he did, which is that he kept slugging away every single day for about a year and a half, and eventually it started to get even in the polls, and thereafter he established a lead.
Paul?
So I'm thinking back to after 1997, which I'm old enough to remember, which was an election defeat that was merely catastrophic compared to the utter disaster of last year. And really after that, the Conservative Party was, it was like a building that's been hit by a bomb, or an ant's nest that's been disturbed and the ants have been flying everywhere. You're not sure if you've got any money. Nobody really knows what they're doing. There are people who've not psychologically adjusted to coming out of government. And you have to sort of put together a team, which is the conventional thing to do, based on people with support in the party or who've been leadership candidates and so on. It's really very hard work. What Kemi Badenoch's decided to do, James alluded to, is her model is Margaret Thatcher after 75, rather than David Cameron after 2005, who set up a massive, very public-facing commissions with sort of big senior former Conservatives and names that would attract a lot of news. And Kemi Badenoch's view is, no, we're going to be more like Margaret Thatcher. Well, the Thatcher team did produce two documents, The Right Approach to the Economy and The Right Approach, I think, within the first one of the two would have been within pretty much 2 years of losing the 1974 election. The question really is, which James alluded to, is in this age where the media is different, everything happens much faster, it's harder to get people's attention, you have a reform, you have a splintering of the party system, is it really well advised to follow this sort of Thatcher route rather than the Cameron route? And I think the sort of jury is out on that. She's said, apparently, that these policy commissions or reviews will be headed by the shadow ministers themselves. There are some arguments for that, but it is a more in-house process and will get less attention. And at the moment, attention is something the Conservatives are short of.
And James, one thing that could have been an early challenge for Kemi Badenoch is by-elections. But as Katie Balls, our political editor, writes in this week's political column, when it comes to Rishi Sunak's resignation as honours, he's going to avoid appointing anyone who is a current MP. So let's talk about those honours lists and what we know about them at the moment. They're not fully out yet.
Absolutely. And of course, yeah, I think the running theme of these podcasts, prime ministerial resignation honours lists can be a difficult subject, shall we say, you know, given some of the recent names that have been appointed by Boris Johnson and Liz Truss. So obviously we had the dissolution honours of Parliament in May of last year. So people like Oliver Dowden got a knighthood, Liam Booth-Smith got a peerage. So we're expecting not a particularly long list with this list that comes out. I think that Katie reports that the list has grown slightly, as often it seems to be a question of addition rather than subtraction on this list.
Which is feeling suddenly very busy.
great Prime Minister. And I think that I don't think there'll be too many surprises on there. I think the danger is, of course, is that there are a number of people who were in the Sunak government, who are obviously lost, and for them, they've achieved many of the great offices or sort of ministries, their goals they achieved. And there is a chunk of the kind of 121 who, as Paul says, that party is now a third smaller than it was in 97. Mm. And in 97, you had all sorts being drafted in, everyone but the bad and the sad, and sometimes even those. And so it's difficult to function as an opposition and hold everyone to account. There are some people, frankly, who are semi-detached or really looking to go. And so I think that there was an interesting report today, and it's difficult to get the metrics right on this thing, but this was by Cavendish Consultancy, which showed that nearly half of all engagement, online engagement, was driven by the five Reform MPs. And that, for me, is, I obviously understand Nigel Farage is a national figure. Rupert Lowe is perhaps someone who is very online. But clearly, it is worth looking at how those 121 Conservative MPs are functioning. And I think one of Kevin Badenoch's most effective moments in recent weeks was when she put down the Grooming Gangs Amendment. And that was playing on an issue of strength. It was her chosen terrain. It was her drawing on the massive legislative expertise the Conservative Party has in the House of Commons and the House of Lords, and was able to kind of hit the government with something and make it about her and her party rather than Reform. On the second point is the other thing that Katie talks about in her column is about comeback kids, the returnees. There are 13 Labour MPs who are retreads at this 2024 election, people who were elected before, lost their seats in 2019 and will come back, and a number of Tory MPs want to do the same. The question is, of course, is, you know, there are a number of people in Parliament who resent that and think, God, why do we need more people? I think one of those people quoted as saying, why do we need Grant Shapps back? You know, poor Grant. So I think that will cause an issue of tension. And of course, you know, do we need more people coming in? Or is it about redrawing on the strength who were lost last time?
Right, and how do you present yourself as a new party if there are so many retreads, Paul?
The position in the Lords is that the government is losing the occasional vote. It tends to be Conservative and Labour peers who are voting. So Labour don't want that, obviously, and there is a mass of Labour peers coming in. Together with a few Conservatives, Therese Coffey, for example, was introduced this week. Rishi Sunak, and again, I'm declaring another interest because I was a Rishi Sunak appointed peer. I think it's not in Rishi Sunak's nature to want to appoint a lot of peers.
Yes.
Right? You know, the last list was quite short. I don't expect this one to be fantastically long, but it will, whoever's on it, reinforce Conservative benches that are actually fairly young. The Labour benches are, if you look across, really quite elderly, and this may be why Labour have not been rushing to implement their own idea of retiring the over-80s. Now, I suspect this is not a pledge or a commitment that's very popular on the Labour benches in the Lords. So from that point of view, we'll see. As for parliamentary candidates, I mean, look, you need a mix. And I think what will be most interesting to see in relation to candidate selection is whether this highly centralised process has been becoming more centralised as time has gone on, with more people parachuted into finals and members given no notice of who they select. It'd be really interesting to see what they do about that. In comparison, you have to say, to Labour, where in some cases they've simply imposed new candidates and MPs on a shortlist of one.
And for all we talk about Reform, etc., being the sort of so-called self-proclaimed, self-identifying people's army, you know, I think that when it comes to the Welsh election next year, for instance, they will be imposing a list of, say, people, these are the people to vote for, etc. And they very much look to the Brexit Party, what they did in 2019, as the example of that, of the European parliamentary candidates. But of course, that was just an imposition. So you can say, oh, we've got this wonderful, talented person, but they're not actually chosen. And reality is, if it comes to a local branch meeting, they might choose their mate Dave, who they're in the association, rather than, say, the glittering talents of whomever the central middle bank office of Reform thinks great.
James and Paul, thanks very much. And of course, on the Lords, we have to declare interest as well, because a certain editor of a certain magazine has also had his name floated.
And it's not Jason Cowley.
It is not Jason Cowley yet. James and Paul, thank you.